Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. And I was finally able to track down an artist that I've admired and liked since he first came out 20 years ago. And now his eighth new album is out. It just came out a couple weeks ago, and it's called Hold the Fire. I would like to welcome to Border Crossings Matis Yahu. Matis Yahu, it's nice to have you on.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
Now, you shaved the beard for a while. It looks like you're going back to the beard.
No, I just don't like shaving very much. The beard always seems to just come back no matter what. Whatever my religious views are, the beard somehow just keeps coming.
There you go. There you go. And, well, when you first started, you had the payas. You had the whole thing going on. The very
not
Hasidic.
The payas. When I first started, I was Chabad, and Chabad doesn't really have payas.
Right.
They have the beard and the black Borsellino hat and the black kaputta, the black jacket.
Right.
And then eventually I started learning a little bit more Hasidus, more breast lover Hasidus. So the breast lover Hasidim, they have payas. It says that when Reb Nachman said that after you pass away, he's going to pull you up from, you know, into heaven by your payas. So they grow their payas as long as they possibly can.
Wow.
My son is in Jerusalem right now, and he's studying in a Breslover yeshiva. He called me last night from King David's grave, and I can see his payas are starting to come in strong.
For those of you who are tuning in, we're talking a little bit about Jewish heritage, traditions, and customs, which I guess, you know, Judaism is kind of one of the motivating things about your new album, Hold the Fire, from what I read.
I wrote the songs for Hold the Fire prior to October 7th. So in the way that my kind of like projection has gone was like, I started out very, very strongly Jewish, very Hasidic, and all of my songs were taken from Psalms or Torah or things I was learning while I was in yeshiva. I'd spent 2 years, you know, in yeshiva studying, not listening to music, and just gathering all this knowledge and thinking, oh, wow, this would be a great hook in a song. You know, this would be a great. And I got that from Bob Marley, from reggae music. That's the tradition of reggae music. So it wasn't like a religious guy doing like hard rock music. I mean, the reggae tradition comes from the Torah. You know, Bob Marley quotes directly the Torah all the time in all of his biggest songs. So basically I was like, okay, I have license to do this, and but I'm doing it from a different context. Like, I'm pulling not just from the Bible, but I'm from all this Jewish philosophy and stuff like that. But eventually, after years of touring and stuff and being religious, I started to move away from it. And I started to feel like it was less central to my being. That being in the world and being on the road 200, 250 days a year and traveling all over the country constantly and all over the world, I started to feel that less so Jewish and more human. More, my song started to become more about my own personal journey and more about being a father, being a partner, ups and downs, joys, pain, addiction, you know, freedom, religion, all of these things. And that's kind of my last 3-4 albums have been more focused on that. Now, when I started writing these songs, the same thing. Only the thing is that the metaphors that I use are all based on my knowledge. And most of that comes from the Torah. So even when I'm discussing personal things, I'm using metaphors oftentimes from the Bible. So for example, the song Fireproof, it's, you know, it's a song that's, you know, has lots of metaphors about overcoming struggle and about, you know, being strong and not giving up, right? And all of my fans love my music because they relate to all these things in their personal lives, whether they're going through whatever they're going through, you know? Now, but when you look at it in the context of post October 7th, you know, what does it mean to be fireproof? While I was walking around in the kibbutzim, in the ashes of the kibbutzim in southern Israel next to Gaza, where, you know, families were murdered in front of their children. I mean, the most horrific things you could ever imagine. So now what does it mean to be fireproof when I sing these songs? You know, now it's about the Jewish people. Now it's about the survival of the soul of the Jewish nation. So it's like it works. It completely works because it's just a shift in my own like kavana and my own like intention when I'm singing the song. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to singing it about, you know, different things, I'm now, you know, in my mind, I'm very specifically, and a lot of my songs are kind of doing that. Mm.
Fireproof. It's the lead single from Hold the Fire, which is the brand new album from Matisse Yahu, album number 8. And you said you've gone through different iterations of what, you know, inspired you at the time. And recently you were inspired by Afropop.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not recently, but I would say about 3 years ago is when I heard, maybe started hearing it. And it was like the most refreshing thing to me because, you know, reggae music and the rhythms, obviously they come originally from Africa, a lot of them. But African music in the mainstream has not been even really a force at all in mainstream music. Whereas reggae music in Jamaica has been, is a universal, you know, music that everybody knows. Now, a lot of the African artists are inspired by reggae music. You see, like, there's an artist that I love called Black Sheriff. And there's a very fine line, like, between him, the way he's chanting, and between a Jamaican artist, you know. But there's something that they're bringing into it from the African culture. He's from Ghana. They're still bringing in their own thing. And the production level has gotten so high, the technology over there. So it's like this whole resurgence where you see how music goes, starts someplace, moves someplace, and then comes back. You know, and for me, kind of listening and listening to that, it's just like, wow, these sounds, this is like this fresh take on reggae music. And for me, I'm always listening to that because reggae is a big part of what's inspired me. So I'm always listening to like what's connecting, what's the connected music to reggae at the time? Is it, you know, is it UK like rap? Is it Afropop from Nigeria or from Ghana? You know, there's like these crossover places. So that's the music that I've been listening to for the last 3 years or so primarily. And I want to, obviously, that's the way I work. You know, when I'm inspired by something, I incorporate that into mm-hmm. what I do.
And yeah. The Grammys just honored African music for the first time. They added the category of best African artist. And
they have to. We can't deny that anymore. It's become the central, most influential music in the world. There's no question about that. That's mm-hmm. how I feel. I think every genre right now, with the exception of like country or something, is like influenced right now heavily by Afropop.
And we are broadcasting in Africa right now. We are all throughout Africa. So I'm sure everybody's very excited and thrilled to hear that you're into Afropop these days. And have you been to Ghana? Have you been to those places?
Nope. I have not been to Africa other than North Africa and South Africa. Yeah. I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to it. God willing, I'll get to go sometime soon.
And you did a concert. I guess you've done, as I read all about what your travels involved, you've done a concert, a surprise concert at a university, I think, not too long ago.
Yeah, I did a bunch of concerts at some of the colleges, some of the Ivy League schools, and the schools where the Jewish students are having a very difficult time, where they're afraid to walk to class and stuff like that. So I wanted to do something special. And I went to Columbia, I went to Cornell, some of these places. And it was, you know, a powerful experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any recording or writing while you were in Israel, while you were actually there on the Gaza Strip and in Israel?
No, I did not, but I did make a video, and I made a video for a song. The song is the next song I'm going to play for you. It's okay. called Ascent, and it's comes from the Shir HaMaalos prayer, which means song of ascent. Mm-hmm. And basically, I made a video for it while we were in Israel. And we shot that video at the site, the Nova site of where the festival was, where they were attacked. We shot it with Nova survivors, you know, and we shot it in the kibbutzim. And this is a very powerful piece. It's a song about anti-Semitism. I wrote it after Kanye's little, you know, thing there. And just a very fitting time. And I think a song of empowerment for a lot of people out there.
For the benefit of an audience that may or may not know what a kibbutz is, can you kind of give a quick definition?
Yeah. A kibbutz is, I guess, essentially like a socialist concept that basically in Israel, people would come together and they all share is the basic idea, that they have a piece of land. They all, you know, farm that land together. They all work that together. They all live together as a community in sort of this very idealistic kind of utopian almost way. It's probably the only way that I've ever seen socialism or communism work. And it's everyone that's there wants to be there. And it's not like a forced thing, you know, it's like It's a communal living, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful part of the Israeli culture.
How have you grown as an artist? How do you see that your music has progressed? Because when you first started, you had one different sound, and you may have a totally different audience than you had with different sounds. So how do you see yourself as you've progressed?
Well, I think actually a good way to discuss it is like the concept, Hold the Fire, the name of the EP, and the second verse of that song, Fireproof, is based on a dream that I had like in my early 30s, about 10 years ago. And in the dream, I'm in an ancient synagogue in the Middle East somewhere, and I'm praying, and there's a baby tiger, and I'm playing with the baby tiger, and the mother tiger sees and starts shooting fire out of her eyes on me, and I'm immersed in fire and flames. And then all of a sudden I realize I'm not burning. I'm like, I'm fine. And I look down at my hand and I see my hand is made out of water. And when I wake up from the dream, I think immediately of the burning bush. The burning bush is the bush where God speaks to Moshe. From Moshe, Moses means drawn from the water, because he was taken from the river. Pharaoh's daughter took him up from the river after the decree of the death of the firstborn sons. So basically, Moshe, Moses, comes from the aspect of water, you know, humility. Mm-hmm. And then the burning bush that God speaks to you from is the fire. So, but what is a fire that doesn't consume itself? So this is, for me, became like central idea as an artist moving forward into my 30s, into my 40s. How do I keep the fire lit and not become engulfed in my own flame and burn up in it? But how do I not let my fire go out completely? Mm-hmm. And that balance is what I've, you know, strive to work towards, I guess, you know, in these last few years.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned you got that song in a dream. Is that where songs come to you usually or typically, or where's the most unique place that you got inspiration for a song?
Well, that's a pretty good one. I don't think that I get that much inspiration from dreams that often. So that's kind of cool to have that, such a graphic image and then such a profound point, and then to be able to take that and then make that into a whole piece of art, is that's kind of a beautiful thing. A lot of times I'm just writing free association, like the music itself is what inspiring me. So the choice and picking and creation of the music is key for me. And when I have that, then it makes it like pretty easy for me to write free association, just stream of consciousness. And then eventually like maybe revise that and turn those into songs. But that initial flow of that stream of consciousness comes usually directly from the music.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Hold the Fire. We've got Matis Yahu with us. We're talking about touring and the album and all the singles and the Grammys that you've been nominated for and all the awards you've won over the years. And you mentioned earlier you have three kids.
Yeah, I have three sons from my first wife, Levi, Shalom, and Menachem. Mm-hmm. Levi and Shalom are both artists that have released music. Levi's 18 and he's in Israel, and Shalom's on tour with me right now, performing every night, helping out on the tour and stuff. And then their younger brother, Menachem, is about to be bar mitzvahed. And then I have a daughter,
Mazel Tov.
Thank you. I have a daughter named Sasha who lives in Bend, Oregon, mm-hmm. Who's just a brilliant, brilliant little girl. And then I have two babies with my current wife, and mm-hmm. her name is Talia. And my babies are Esty, she's 4, and Judah Mack, he's mm-hmm. 2.
So all the names are kind of biblical names that you're pulling.
Yeah, I guess you could say they're pretty Jewish names.
Yeah,
we're like in a restaurant in like Texas. So I'm like screaming my kid's name, Judah. Everyone's looking at me.
But it's interesting because your real name, your name at birth, was Matthew Miller.
Correct.
So how did this all become? How did you become Matis Yahu?
Well, my parents weren't very like religious people or anything, so they would have no reason to give me a Hebrew name. Matthew is the name I was given. And then as I became religious and I wanted to kind of identify more as Jewish, I just sort of switched my name over from Matthew to the Hebrew version, which is Matis Yahu.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mean?
Matis Yahu is just a character he's most known from the story of Hanukkah. He basically had a family of sons. They're called the Hasmoneans and the Maccabee soldiers. And when the Assyrian major superpower came in and to destroy Jerusalem at that particular time, Matis Yahu and his son Judah Maccabee and their their family stood up and they defeated them. So they were from a tribe of warriors, you know.
Well, that's that. We got the Matisyahu tribe, which is six kids big, and they're all musically inclined or in some way, shape, or form, which is wonderful that they can certainly rely on dad for advice and guidance because you've got the experience. Now, if somebody came up to you in the business and said, okay, Matisyahu, you have a choice. You can only be a songwriter or a singer. Which would you prefer?
Wow, that's a great question. Only a songwriter or a singer? At this particular stage in my life or at the beginning of my career? Well, at the beginning of my career, I probably would have said singer because I probably would have. I love the feeling and the adrenaline of being on stage and performing. That was a big part of things for me, as was songwriting, my kind of therapeutic, you know, thing. So that's a very difficult question to answer. I don't know that I can answer it. I would probably say at this stage, I'd probably rather, if I could make enough money, I would rather be a songwriter, stay home with my family probably.
Right. That's what I thought. I heard the money's in songwriters. You know, they make all the money.
Yeah, it's a comfortable life, I think, you know.
Yes,
you
yes.
You don't have to be walking around parking lots at 8 a.m. looking for a bathroom.
Or looking for a Wi-Fi connection.
Exactly.
We've got Matisyahu is with us, and Hold the Fire is the new album, so please pick up a copy of it. And it's been 20 years, so has this gone by quickly? I mean, it must be a flash. Do you look back and say, I can't believe it's gone so fast?
Yeah, it is. It does. It feels like a different lifetime or something ago. I don't know. It goes quickly, but it also feels like so, like a whole, like I've lived like 10 lives, you know. It's crazy.
What is Sephardic fusion? That's a term that's been applied to your music.
Really? I've never heard that before. Sephardic fusion would be Sephardic music, which would be music from North Africa, the North African Jews, the Jews that were, you know, thrown out of all the Middle Eastern countries. Basically, after the destruction of the temple, the Jews, the diaspora, they moved, right? They were pushed out. Some went all the way to Europe, like Poland and Russia. Those are Ashkenazi Jews. Some went to Morocco, to Lebanon, to Syria, to Egypt, everywhere. So the Jews and the Arabs, you know, at that point, were all living together. And then eventually all those Muslim countries threw the Jews out. And those Jews went to Israel. But those Jews that are not white skinned, you know, like the way a lot of society looks at Jews today, like as if we're all from Eastern Europe. The majority of our people are darker skinned and they're from the Middle East.
Yes.
And those are the Sephardic Jews. And the culture is obviously different than Ashkenazi Jews in terms of what kind of food do you eat? You know, what kind of fish is it? What kind of, is it gefilte fish or is it a different type of Moroccan salmon? You know, this some of the things. So the music is different. It's a different style, different type of singing. It's more of an African, Middle Eastern kind of style. And fusion, obviously, is fusion. So I guess someone feels that I have some kind of mixture of Sephardic music with mine, but I've never heard that before.
Well, there are artists who are Orthodox, who are in the religious realm of, you know, Judaism, and they don't work on Shabbat. Do you work on Shabbat, or is that something
you
say?
Yeah. As of right now, I do, but I'm toying with the idea of stopping again. There was a time when I didn't, many, many years, when I didn't play on Friday night or travel on Saturday. And like I do now, but it's definitely come back into my thought process that there might come a time again that I'll stop doing that.
Three singers that you would like to collaborate with, and they can be dead or alive.
Black Sheriff, Omalay, Burna Boy.
Oh, you're big Afrobeats guy. You named all the Afrobeats artists.
Well, those are all Afropop, but those are probably my three favorite.
Right. So no Ray Charles or any of that? There's nothing in...
No, I love Ray Charles, but I love Bob Dylan, Jerry Garcia.
How about Bob Marley? Know? There's a that he
Bob
should be.
Marley, those are the obvious ones, you know.
Right. Obvious, yeah. Border Crossings, Matisyahu, that's called End of the World. And what were you thinking when you wrote the song? How did that?
Well, I actually didn't write this one. One of the things that I did in this last process is I worked with just a multitude of different writers, producers, engineers. I made about 40 songs last year in about a 6-month period. And this is one of those songs that I brought in somebody to help me with. And the guy who helped me write this song, his name is Sir Charles Coffey. He's from Mississippi, a young poet and singer. Not necessarily a very famous person or anything like that, but I worked with him on another song and he just did such an incredible job. We had seven writers in the room. We had all written to the song. And what we do is kind of like, we all kind of do our thing and then we find the best parts and mix it all together. And that's a new way of working for me. I haven't worked that way before, but I loved it. And so we listened to his version and we literally just, the day was over. We just like all stopped and we just took his version. So I had another song, this song, End of the World. It was a beat, rhythm that I'd been worked, that I had gotten from a producer in LA named Luke Atlas. And one of my favorite beats that I wanted to write over, but couldn't find the right approach to it. And the beat is so unique that I really wanted something special for it. So I called him up. I asked if he would do something on it. And he sent back something that was just unbelievable. And then, you know, reworked that and added some things and added a hook. But for the most part, most of those words and lyrics and melodies are coming from Sir Charles Coffey.
What is the what's the reception like when you tour internationally, when you perform outside of the United States? Do they get what your music's about? Do they understand you?
Historically, there's been a mixture of things going on there, and it depends where. So like Israel, obviously, now is a very powerful place for me to perform. I was performing there for the soldiers, and that was very intense. In Spain, I was boycotted. They tried to throw me off of a festival. And then eventually I went back. They apologized and had me come back. That was in 2014. Check that out. Hmm. And basically, that was my experience there. I've played in South America, in the Philippines, you know, I've played all over. And the fans are usually awesome and just super grateful that I'm there. But there have been a few experiences that are, have been a bit of a test. Hmm. And I'm curious. I haven't really played overseas very much lately, and based on what's going on in the world right now, my desire to go to a lot of the places that I once played is kind of lacking.
Right. The focus is on the Middle East, you know, where there's a lot of conflict growing every day. And
for me, the focus is on America, and it always has.
Oh,
you know, I've toured, like I said, extensively overseas, but the majority, I would say, like maybe probably 75% of my touring at least has been in the country of America, and not just in New York or L.A., but just on a tour bus going from place to place, you know, from Albuquerque to Aspen to San Diego to Felton to whatever it is. I've played these small towns and cities all over the country, and that's kind of where I feel the most at home and the most safe and the most connected. And I kind of don't really have that strong of a desire to go to places where I don't feel safe, you know.
Matis Yahu, Hold the Fire is the name of the new album. Before we let you go, I just wanted to find out, where can people find out more about you? What are your social media sites, your website?
I would say Instagram is where I'm the most active in terms of my daily, day-to-day. Instagram and TikTok, and just look up Matis Yahu, MatisYahu.
All right. It's pretty simple. Thank you so much for being on the show. Is there, you know, a man with a message like yourself who you always have a message? I'm going to give you a chance to send a message to the global audience that are tuned in to this broadcast right now, which, as I say, the troops are also listening and tuned in as well. So Matis Yahu, the floor is yours.
I want to say a big thank you to the troops. You know, this is a very special, special thing. People protecting and protecting us, you know. And, you know, in America, it's been hard to connect to that for some people. And going to Israel for me and seeing the troops in Israel and American kids that are there fighting, it kind of awoken me to who these warriors are. And now when I sing my song, Live Like a Warrior, you know, I think of the troops. And I don't just think of the Israeli troops. I think of the military that's protecting America and that's keeping us safe, because right now is a scary time, you know? So thank you guys for all that you do, and women, guys and gals, everyone, God bless you, and bring our hostages home. Let's end this conflict. Just free our hostages.
Yes. They still have over 100. So, exactly. Yeah. I understand. Mati Siahu, thank you for being on the program and being on the Voice of America. Like I say, it's been years in the making. So I'm so happy to be able to talk to you finally. And when you're in D.C., come by and we'll chat again on the air if you want to do
that. We'll be at the 9:30 Club. I hope we can get you out to the show.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Love to do that. Mati Siahu is his name. Hold the Fire is the name of the new album, which is now out. And this is Border Crossings. I'm Larry London. You're watching VOA TV.